out in front like that in the community? Because I'm hard pressed to think about any major project that's happened, you know, over the last number of years that you guys haven't at least been a part of.
Well, I appreciate that.
Yeah.
I think, you know, this year we're celebrating our 90th birthday. So after you've been around for 90 years, I guess you're going to do some projects.
There's not a lot of places that have been around that long, right? No. You know, we're approaching our 90th as well. So you guys were around before radio, which is a pretty amazing thing. We'll get into some of the details, but how important is architecture to education? I mean, we have the argument about bricks and mortar, right?
Sure.
And I think it's completely changed from maybe the conversation we would have had 20 years ago about bricks and mortar. But how important is architecture to education?
Well, there's a lot of research that shows how our environment shapes our behaviors and student outcomes. Obviously, the most important thing with education is the relationship between the teacher and the students. That has the primary impact. But, you know, the ability for students to be in places that are naturally lit, to be accessed to daylight, to be able to move through a building without too much anxiety and too much stress. All of these things have impacts on student outcomes.
Okay, this is something probably if they don't do what you do for a living, most people don't really think about.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they might react to it without knowing it, but walking through the halls, they don't. I think about, like, I went to Eisenhower every day, right, back in 1982, and we really didn't think about the architecture. Now I go in there, and the only thing I recognize is that one hallway, you know, down the front and everything else. But I don't think we knew what it could look like. You guys could see that, right?
Yes, absolutely.
And still today, all these years later, it looks brand new, and there still has that wow factor. I mean, I'm sure you guys hear this all the time. When people walk into Eisenhower, there is a psychological impact of just walking into a place that looks like that, right?
Absolutely.
That's important. Dr. Freb, you're fairly new to the community. I mean, what did you think when you walked in there the first time?
Oh, absolutely. I drove my wife by our first time we came and visited, and she even said that, wow, that's a really nice building. Just from the outside, we didn't walk in.
Yeah.
But, Sam and his team did a great job with those projects.
Well, the concept, though, seems more like it always seemed to be more like a community college feel or more of a quad than necessarily a public school. Mm-hmm. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I mean, I know you get some old timers like, all you need is this and this and this. But it makes people, I think, want to go to that school. And I love walking in there with people for the first time. We did the swag program. We started doing all the videos there, and we brought this camera crew in that had never been in there. They were like, I mean, because these are visual people, right?
Yeah.
And they were just blown away. All right, so now we're talking about BOLD. And boy, you educators love your acronyms. There's nothing more, right? If you go to school board meeting, not understand a thing that they say. Literally, Building Better Opportunities for Learning Indicator. Is that right?
Yes, it is.
BOLD. Did you come up with that one?
No, I think I got to give Maria probably credit for that.
Okay.
Maybe a couple school board members weighed in on that, but no, there's people a lot smarter than me who connected all those dots.
What is the BOLD plan overall?
You know what? I think at the end of all this, we want to make sure that when our students enter buildings, they get these great learning environments, they cutting-edge opportunities. Sam's working on some things right now where we've hacked some classrooms. I'm going to not take asunder. He's going to talk about that.
Yeah.
But really, it's that each of our students have that great opportunity to have these authentic experiences in their learning environments.
Okay, so let's talk about some of the timeline here. You guys had you're transitioning to the one middle school. We talked about that last time you were here. Prototype classrooms, hack spaces. I don't even know what that means. What is a hack space?
Well, it's coming up with a quick prototype of a possible solution.
Okay.
As a process of invention goes, you've got to come up with ways that allow people to understand what a space is going to look like, how it's going to feel, how it's going to function before it gets built. So the best process of invention are using this design thinking approach. And so what we do is we create prototype learning environments by hacking an existing environment. In other words, in the gallery of Stephen Decatur right now, you're going to see a project-based learning prototype. So it's not a finished, it's not finished construction. You know, it's not polished like the things that you talked about at Eisenhower. It's framed up. It's got technology. It's got furnishings. So teachers and students can use the space, understand what it's like, understand how it impacts student behavior, student concentration, and learn from what works and make sure that that gets implemented in the final design.
You know, part of this is the visual wow effect and what that has on kids and parents. But we go back and this is in all seriousness, in my time on the Public Schools Foundation Board, back when we were buying like Promethean, you know, smart boards or something for the first time, you had teachers that couldn't plug them in because somebody across the hall was using. I mean, this is how antiquated, you know, just the electrical system was in some of these schools. And I know that people have a hard time believing that. I would ask you, what does your nightstand look like tonight? You know, when you go to bed with all the devices you have plugged in and the thing, the way we live in the world, classrooms need to be ready for that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's quite a change, you know, and it can happen incrementally. By building bigger, better versions of old ideas, or, you know, just as the phone came through and transformed our life, you know, we can think of new solutions, better solutions that allow us to operate effectively within the dollars that the district needs to operate.
Well, let me ask you this from an architect, textural point of view. We look at the car industry, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I look at the industry I'm in, and I've watched what everyone's tried to do, which is fascinating. The car industry figured out, okay, well, it takes us 5 years, basically, from design to production of a new car.
Mm-hmm.
And the way we communicate changes dramatically in those 5 years.
Yes.
So what the car companies did is they quit trying to figure out the dash, and they just started making the dash a receptacle for your phone, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because the phone's going to change 10 times in those 5 years. So all we have to do is make this dash ready for this phone to interface with, and then we don't have to worry about the technology.
Right.
Is there something to that when you're building classrooms or building buildings? Because, I mean, you know, we don't know what 5 years from now looks
like. Sure, that's true.
You could build a school 40 years ago, and 20 years later, it was still going to look the same. Now we change so much so quickly, we don't know what 5 years looks
like. That's, you know, and that's a great way to describe what's going on in school construction right now, because there is no uniform definition of what a 21st century facility is.
Right.
And so that's why we're going through the process that we are. This is a design thinking process, letting students and teachers drive the bus about how the educational environment should evolve. Then we have a chance of hitting something that will be effectively utilized. There's so many new school designs that sit there unoccupied, not used, not not filled with students and teachers doing amazing things. And so going through this process is the process that allows us to align facility response with teacher practice and student learning.
All right. Why do you suppose that we left public school districts without air conditioning when the rest of the world adapted, you know, so long ago? This is sort of like the last place you go in a professional setting where we send young kids and not have AC.
I wish I could explain that.
I wish I had a dollar for every old person that complains about this. I really, because I know you have AC in your home. I mean, it's a standard way of living for everything except public education.
Yeah, I can't explain that. And by the way, I would argue that today's schools are hotter than when our grandparents were going
through. A lot more equipment that's humming.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's producing heat just like people.
That mimeograph machine, you know, wasn't putting out a lot of juice, that's for sure. And so that's going to be a part of this, right?
Yeah.
We were talking off the air about school closings and heat, and then you get to winter and all of that. The idea that these schools will have AC, not only for the kids, but for the teachers and the staff, this is a huge improvement.
Absolutely. And it's you know, you are saying, what do you want at the end of this? Absolutely, having air conditioning in all our buildings that house students and staff, where teaching and learning is going on, as a matter of fact, it was a primary driver to even kick the conversation off.
Everyone remembers what it was like to sit there and be completely distracted because it's 105 degrees. I mean, that's just not a great learning environment. I mean, you're going to improve everybody's life by doing that. All right, so tell me what's happening. We heard about the middle schools and what's happening with that. What's happening at the elementary level?
Okay, district-wide, we're going through a planning process. Had our first big meeting 2 days ago, where what was called a futures workshop. But we're trying to, you know, there are a lot of elementary facilities that are impacted that are going to have some construction. Some is just air conditioning, but others are going to be reconfigured. And so we are defining what future ready elementary learning environments look like, so that as those first projects roll off, the additions to South Shores, the additions and renovations at Parsons, Muffley, and Franklin, they can all follow sort of a uniform roadmap, if you will, so that all schools over time create the same kinds of learning environments. We establish equity across the district. So we've taken the first steps, the futures learning environment. The next few steps are going to be things like defining what that environment needs to include, and then ideation. It's where we sketch concepts about how renovations can occur.
Okay, and then what buildings are going to go away, or at least go away as used today?
You bet. We're going to combine Stevenson and Parsons
up
north, and so that they will go to Parsons. We're combining Oak Grove and Franklin, and those students will go to Franklin. We're combining Baum and Muffley. Those students will go to Muffley. And then and then as we combine our two Montessoris and bring them to Thomas Jefferson in August of 2020, that gives us an opportunity for some enterprise students who may not be part of that enterprise program and with Montessori to stay there at South Shores.
Okay. So then what happens to, like, a bomb?
You know what? I think in Baum's case, it'll be repurposed within the district. There are a couple different, whether it's an early childhood, whether there's a, because Baum's are really, it's a nice building, it's air conditioning, air conditioned. That particular building probably is unique of the others. The other building, you know, I think we're talking about how people utilize. I think the ROE has talked to us whether one of those buildings may be available. Parks and Rec have talked about maybe amping up their senior center and looking at that a little bit differently. Okay. So I think there'll be some people that will look at that. Durfee is obviously going to be a building that's closed, and it will be, you know, we'll be able to
look at what happened.
Download that.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So
we don't want to leave those eyesores around.
No. But you've got so many buildings and so many kids, and instead of trying to spread out the kids to fit the buildings, you're fitting the kids in a right size space, right? I mean, that's just an effective way of using your money.
Yeah. It's what's necessary to be sustainable.
Now, they had to do this in Chicago a couple of years ago, and it was not very popular. I mean, they have so much gang violence there that it caused problems because kids had to cross over from one gang territory to another, get to the new school they were going to. I mean, thankfully, we don't have to worry about that kind of thing.
Right.
I mean, so this is about repurposing and resizing based on the population.
Yeah, and it's also driven by these opportunities for students to learn.
And make it better.
Yeah.
But more affordable at the same time.
Absolutely. It's dual purpose. It's
all right. So how much fun do you have doing this rather than just sort of regular? I mean, you know,
this is why I get up.
Yeah.
This is you know, getting to work with students. Part of this process is we get to design with students. They sit down at this thing that we call ideation.
Yeah.
And we sketch up concepts together, and then we put them up on the wall. It's amazing. It's amazing to talk to some of these students. There's a seventh grade girl at TJ who was just fascinated by chromosomes and how her genealogy changes. Anyhow, if you put a wall between us, you thought you were talking to your peer.
Yeah.
How she learns on YouTube, she plays something I think called Stardew Valley, which is like a multi-gamer sustainable farm game, which I didn't know something like that existed. I'll bet she could talk about what's important in developing sustainable agricultural industries. I mean, she was amazing, and it was a seventh grade girl.
Yeah. So you like the interactions?
Oh my gosh!
Well, the kids aren't cynical yet.
No, they're not. Middle school kids are fun too.
Yeah. I mean,
we had up at Stephen Decatur, we had a board that said, "What are your hopes and dreams?" And you saw so many things that were so future focused. You know, I want to be a scientist. I want to be a marine biologist. I want to open a bakery. And you know, we want to tie the facility design as much as possible to their aspirations and their learning. But you also had some funny, you know, middle school kid stuff.
Well, yeah. I mean, they're still, still 12 and 13, 14 years old. All right. So what's been the overall public reaction? Just, you know, people are generally not comfortable with change. That's just sort of a human nature thing. I read this study this week that fascinated me, that the human brain, that we're hardwired to be negative. I mean, it goes back to sort of caveman days, really? Because you didn't want to get lulled into complacency. Sure. So you're cynical about things, and our brain still fires that way, even though we don't have to worry about the woolly mammoth coming out of the whatever. Yet there is always this sort of public reaction to sort of not embrace change. I have found in an industry that changes constantly, the change generally ends up, generally, for the most part, being better. I mean, if you learn to kind of lean into the curve rather than sort of fighting it, it's even better than that. But yet people are reluctant. So I'm sure you're getting homers that are attached emotionally to one school or one name and some of that. But what's been the overall reception from the public?
You know, maybe I'm looking through rose-colored glasses, but it's generally been pretty positive, although change is uncomfortable.
Yeah.
I probably got to give some credit to some people before us, because I think DPS has been on the stage of this a few different times in their past about we were right here and right here. And I know in my early months here, some of the conversations is we need to move on some of these things. The intergovernment meeting that they had in Milliken,
and
some of that was the conversation. So maybe it's just the right time. And
I think that most of the voices, there's a lot going on in our community right now. And there will always be naysayers. I mean, that's just a part of life. But I think there's a lot more momentum and people that are buying in than there has been in 20 years. There's just a lot rolling.
There really is.
And I think you get a Dr. Frigo who comes to town who's, you know, a likable guy. It's hard to be mad at him. He's just a likable guy, right?
Yeah.
We had a change agent in Gloria, and I was a big fan. And I know some people weren't, but she was brought in to do a very specific thing. Which she did, and I don't think anything that Dr. Frigo is doing now would have been possible without sort of that. And so I want to make sure that I always feel like defending her, because she just did a lot. But now you got some of the hard stuff done, and now it's more about let's get where we're going the next 10, 15 years. I think there's a lot of people that are buying into that. And what does this look like? And I think there's a resurgence in District 61. I can tell you our 15-year-old, he's going to get his learner's permit today.
Oh, nice.
Wow. There you go.
Be very afraid. All of you, be very afraid. But he's had such a tremendous experience at Eisenhower High School. Excellent. As a freshman. Now he's in his second semester. Mm-hmm. Where this kid and others, I mean, he stays after school, like on game nights, with his bandmates. I mean, he doesn't come home, until 8:30. I mean, he's at high school from, 8 o'clock in the morning till 8:30 at night. I mean, that's unusual, or at least that's not maybe what people's perspective is. And we still get these questions all the time. And I just wish people had a reality versus what their perception is.
Yeah, that's so true.
You're in these schools a lot.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. And just to work with the students, perception. We do scrutinize ourselves, I think, very hard in this community, and we don't necessarily see the great work that's going on. We work with the Inspire Ed program, so we get an intern in our office. This is our third year in a row, and I can't say enough about the capabilities of these students.
Yeah.
I just can't.
Well, I would encourage people. We've got particularly an older demographic that really haven't maybe had a reason to be inside a school because they don't have kids or grandkids that are in the public school system, so there's no reason for them to sort of be there. I think the more you guys can do to bring the public to you, and then in segments like this, bring you to the public, I mean, that's just a good thing. But there's a lot to be proud of and a lot to be excited about. And AC, I mean, if you're complaining about kids having AC, you're just too old. You really got to come to grips with that.
And don't forget 3D printing and all of the innovative things that are really engaging students that are part of this. It's just amazing watching in the Stephen Decatur hack, watching the makerspace that's in there.
Yeah.
And Jesse Blunt from Project Think, well, I want to thank him for helping us understand how making is part of 21st century education. Those sorts of opportunities are being provided, are going to be provided by our district.
You know, I was like the worst enemy on the foundation board because I hated paying for books. I mean, why are we buying books? I always thought the book industry was the biggest scam going in education, right?
Especially
in
college.
In college, but even, I'd see this in schools. And it's like, okay, you put a new paragraph in every year, so you got to spend another $75 to buy the book again, But now that we're in a digital space and kids have iPads and they have the technology, it's amazingly, it's much more affordable, right? I know that sometimes people think technology has this huge cost, but I don't think people understood the hard cost of education when it was buying textbooks.
Absolutely. What they have in their hand can house all those textbooks. And I know they still have some textbooks. We still have some of that. But I see a pretty near future where we that just won't be a part of it.
Yeah, well, I can't wait for it. I think it's amazing. And you're right, the doing part of education, right?
It's
not just sort of an adult standing up there and just giving you this, having them be a part of learning. I mean, I think all the way through college. I remember when Millikan, sort of put this in place, and there were schools, I think, that were doing this, before that. Mm-hmm. But the idea of giving back to the community and being involved, all these things, it's very, very important for buy-in.
Yeah. Yeah, experiential learning. I mean, it's how we learn. It's how we learn deeply. We've known that for a long time. And so our educational programs are evolving to include that. That's where you learn the creativity and innovation that's so important.
All right. Well, there's exciting changes coming up for the next couple of years. Guys, we really appreciate you being here today. Thank you.